Melissa Lockard with Steve Berman from the Steamheads, a show about the Oakland A's. It was a really rough 24 hours for the A's on Saturday when they lost Matt Chapman for the year to a hip injury that's going to require surgery on Monday. And then later that day, Chad Pinder strained his hamstring on that new field turf at Globe Life Field. And all of a sudden, the position that was of great strength for them going into the season is a huge hole over there on the left side of the infield. The A's have made a move to sign former Diamondbacks All-Star third baseman Jake Lamb and have brought up Nate Orr from the alternate site. But obviously, almost nobody in baseball can replace Matt Chapman. Steve, what do you think they're going to be able to do to get right before the postseason without arguably their best player?
Well, it's a tough question. I don't know if they can. It's a situation where you're losing not just your most talented player probably, but also your team leader. So it's tough to roll in a Jake Lamb or Nate Orff and say, all right, guys, pick up the slack here. I think it's really going to be up to the guys who were already on the roster to maybe play a little better. You know, I think Canna showed that he could carry the team for a bit last year when Laureano was hurt. I think you're going to need, even though Marcus Semien just came back from injury, you're going to need him to kind of step it up a bit. Same with Laureano too. And so, yeah, you need that sort of right-handed power to get brought in from what you already have, because at this point in the season, you pretty much, you've got what you got. I mean, Jake Lamb's an interesting addition. Maybe the A's can fix him, but he hasn't really done anything in a few years.
To me, the signing of Jake Lamb is more to stabilize the defense than it is to do anything offensively. The guy did hit 30 home runs just a couple seasons ago, so it's not impossible that he could get back to being a positive offensive contributor. But I think at this point, defense seems to be the thing that was most out of whack once Chapman went down. It was hard to tell because they didn't really have the replays really of the particular play, but it was over at second base. But that line drive base hit that came right before Odor's home run on Sunday's game looked to me like Tony Kemp could have made that catch. And again, they didn't show the replay, so it was hard to tell exactly where that was. But their whole defense has seemed slightly off kilter since Chapman's been out. And I don't know if it's a positioning thing that maybe because, you know, he can cover so much ground on the left side that they can move the middle infielders over to be more in the gaps than, you know, they can otherwise. But, you know, Lamb has had a pretty good history defensively. He had a couple of down years, but the last few years, whenever he's been at third base, he's been okay. Not having Chad Pinder meant that you're, you know, relying on really Vamil Machin, who's a rookie and had not had very much time above double A going into this season. And then you've got Tommy La Stella, who's really more of a hitter than he is a defender at any position. So I think Lamb probably gives them more of a defensive stability at this point than an offensive fire plug.
Yeah, and you do need that. You want to be able to have, really your infield defense for the A's has been pretty much one of their greatest strengths for the last couple of years, and especially with Semien really stepping up last year defensively after being kind of a shaky defender before. This year, I think he's been a little bit off too, but I mean, I thought Chapman's defense was off until he ended up having hip surgery, and I think we saw the reason why his throwing wasn't nearly as accurate all throughout the shortened season as we've seen before. You'd like to have that infield defense to be at least something that you can depend on to be, I guess, serviceable at this point. You don't want to have weaknesses all around the diamond. I don't know if Lamb is really the answer. I mean, I think his defense is okay, but I think the A's are also hoping for a little bit of power from him as well. I don't know if that's going to occur. Machine, I think, actually has impressed me a bit just in his versatility. But yeah, I think the A's at this point, they're going to have to have other areas of the team kind of step up here, because Chapman was just sort of a given for quite a while here, and now he's gone for the foreseeable future. It's, you know, you're hoping that he'll be back in time for most of next season, but even that's sort of up in the air right now.
The one thing that hopefully will be working in their favor is that they caught the hip labrum tear early, according to Scott Boras in an article that Susan Slusser wrote over the weekend. And if that is true, and we won't know, of course, until the surgery's done and they have the kind of post-op diagnosis of it, but if there's not a lot of damage besides just that torn labrum, you know, maybe it's the quicker end of recovery and it didn't lead to him doing, you know, other things. I mean, the one thing with a hip, right, is that you have a bad hip and you start walking differently, you start moving differently, and it changes is kind of the anatomy of your entire gait. So if he wasn't having a lot of that leading up to this, if it was just sort of recent, maybe it doesn't have a lasting impact. But, you know, from a team perspective and offensively, obviously right-handed power is their biggest area of strength. And so if you were going to lose a hitter, losing Matt Chapman is probably less impactful than losing Matt Olson, because he gives you at least that left-handed power. But one of the things I think that would make a lot of sense to me anyway would be for them to try to get Chris Davis going before the postseason. I know that they haven't actually clinched anything yet, but it seems like it's inevitable that they're going to at least make it. And at this point, it would be a big upset if they didn't win the division. They're starting him against left-handed starters, but it's so irregular that you see those guys. There really isn't a chance for him to even build on a good game at this point. So if you're at a position where you're not necessarily worrying about wins and losses as much as you're worrying about getting ready for this postseason, getting Chris Davis at least on some sort of a hot roll could make the difference in a 3-game series. And it seems worth at least trying to kind of get him in the lineup every day.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of that because, you know, I think his at-bats looked a little bit better over the weekend. He just doesn't look so lost at the plate overall as he has for a good portion of the last year and a half. But that would be great. If he could come back and be the Chris Davis of old, then all of a sudden your lineup is still strong enough to probably at least, you know, do some damage in the postseason. I mean, I don't think that, you know, losing Matt Chapman as bad as it is means that their season's over by any means. I mean, losing Pinder, you know, like a day later or whatever it was, is also not that much fun because you can slot him into so many different positions and he's valuable for that reason. But hey, if you get a Chris Davis back and he's actually hitting home runs again to all fields, then all of a sudden, you know, there's not that much weakness in the lineup. So that's a big if, because it seems like he hasn't really been himself ever since really last May. But, you know, crazier things have happened.
And it was interesting. Somebody mentioned to me over the weekend that, of course, Chris Davis doesn't play in the outfield because he developed sort of a yip situation with his throws after he had had an arm injury. And physically, there's no reason that he shouldn't be able to make good throws, but mentally, he's just never been able to get past that, whatever that hurdle was with that injury. It would be almost sort of like maybe he's going through a similar thing offensively coming off that injury last year, that physically he's healthy, but somehow there's almost a mental yip or a mental block for him to, you know, get a good swing going and feel right again. And to me, if it is something like that, the only way they're going to ever be able to get him past that is to get him in there every day. And, you know, it's hitting such a feel thing that one time it feels right against, you know, a pitcher throwing velocity. I think he's shown that he can handle, you know, sort of finesse pitchers at this point. But the velocity pitchers are the ones that are giving him a lot of trouble, and certainly didn't give him a lot of trouble before the injury. So it's almost like, he, you know, if there was one at bat where he was able to kind of catch up to that velocity and sort of muscle memory what that used to feel like, maybe it gets him past that mental hurdle it seems to have developed.
Yeah, I think a lot of it seems mental with him, really. All last year we were asking Melvin, you know, is Chris Davis hurt? And he'd always say, no, he's fine. He's just working on some stuff right now. And I don't know. I think he, you know, obviously was dealing with something after that injury that he had in the field, I think in Pittsburgh. But it seems like it's mental this year. I mean, by now he's had plenty of time to get better. And I think a lot of it, you can almost just see his mind working at the plate, you know, as he's guessing incorrectly and then not able to catch up to the fastball and then diving at pitches that, hit the ground in some circumstances. But Chris Davis would be really nice to kind of bring back into the fold the way he was before.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. One of my biggest health challenges is staying hydrated. I do not like the taste of water, so I find it to be a chore to try to remember to drink my 2 or 3 or 4 daily glasses of water that is recommended by virtually everyone. I've taken to drinking hot water throughout the day just to give myself a sense of feeling like it's a special treat, but staying hydrated has definitely been a big challenge for me. And believe it or not, dehydration occurs daily in 3 out of 4 people. With Liquid IV, you have the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. Each serving helps you get as much hydration as 2 or 3 bottles of water. When I'm hydrated, I definitely am much more awake. You know, my skin feels better. I just feel like I'm actually engaged with what I'm doing. And so proper hydration is definitely crucial for your immune system as well. And of course, now, you know, the immune system is basically all we're thinking about. With Liquid IV, you have the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. Plus, it's packed with potassium, vitamin C, and other vitamins known to help your body defend against infections. Proper hydration can boost your immunity. One serving of Liquid IV provides the same hydration as drinking 2 or 3 bottles of water alone. It contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana, so you can even cut out the random fruit eating you're doing throughout the day. It's healthier than drinking your sugary sports drinks, no artificial flavors or preservatives, and less sugar than an apple. Made with clean ingredients, non-GMO, vegan, and free of gluten, dairy, and soy. What makes Liquid IV so effective? Cellular transport technology. The optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, and potassium delivers water and nutrients into the bloodstream. It's the perfect balance to help you hydrate more quickly and effectively than water alone. One stick of Liquid IV in a 16-ounce glass of water can give you as much hydration as 2 or 3 bottles of plain water. And if you're like me and you're drinking plain water is a chore, it gives you one chance to do it, and then you don't have to worry about being hydrated the rest of the day. Liquid IV is on a mission to change the world. It's donating 3.7 million servings in response to COVID-19. Products are being donated to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, and active military. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco or Target. You can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code ATHLETIC at checkout. That's 25% off anything that you order when you use the promo code ATHLETIC at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code ATHLETIC.
Finding clothes that fit you just right can be incredibly challenging. I know for me, I have a little bit longer arms. Sometimes it seems like the jacket or the shirt will be a little bit big as long as it covers all the way to my wrists. And so, you know, when you actually get clothes that fit you just right, then you feel a lot better. Wearing a good suit should be comfortable and you should look a lot better than you do in your normal clothes during the pandemic of wearing sweats and t-shirts. So Indochino suits are great for weddings or work, and they actually even offer casual options now like shirts, coats, chinos. I actually have a wedding coming up. The date has been moved now a couple times due to the pandemic, but my cousin's getting married and I need a suit for this. So actually, the suit that I'm going to get is going to be from Indochino. I booked a virtual style consultation. What's great is you do the measurements really easily, and you can personalize whatever you want. If you want monograms, you want to choose different types of fabric, the cut of the pants, the cut of the jacket, anything that you want, and you're going to feel confident and stylish. So with Indochino, you get custom-fitted suits, coats, and casual wear at surprisingly affordable prices. You can customize everything from the fabric, the lining, the lapel shape. And since your order is made to your exact measurements, it always fits you perfectly. If you're getting married, Indochino is a no-brainer for you and your groomsmen. You just don't have to worry about off-the-rack suits that don't fit different body types. Indochino gives everyone a tailored fit so they feel great. Order with ease, get it shipped fast no matter where you live. And with the ways to customize, you can add a personal touch everyone will be proud to wear without emptying their pockets. The best part is that Indochino suits start at just $299 with all customizations included. So visit one of the Indochino storerooms across North America or book a virtual appointment and shop online at Indochino.com. And right now, as a bonus, you'll get $30 off any purchase of $399 or more when you enter code SEAMHEADS at checkout. So that's Indochino.com, promo code SEAMHEADS. I think one guy who I've noticed just over the past couple weeks who I think has a good chance of being one of the A's best players the rest of the way is Sean Murphy. I'm incredibly impressed. His defense is fantastic. His arm is as good as anyone in the league and from the catcher spot. And it's just his strength in terms of a hitter. I mean, I remember last year watching him. I don't remember exactly which game it was, but he hit a double that was like, it never went more than like 12 feet off the ground and hit the wall. And I was just like, man, this guy has got some ridiculous raw power. And then you saw that on display with his 464-foot home run the other day in Texas that almost decapitated a cameraman. Poor guy wasn't looking. And that just the sound off the bat that he had. And then he's having great at-bats just pretty much every day. So, I mean, at this point now with all these doubleheaders, you can't have him catch every day, but he's the guy in the playoffs who I'd imagine will be the starting catcher and catch just about every inning. And I don't know, I see a future all-star here. Maybe I'm kind of jumping the gun a little bit, but I think he's been fantastic and one of their best players lately.
Yeah, you know, I always kind of jokingly referred to him as the Matt Chapman of A's catching prospects because
there you go.
They even kind of look alike. I mean, you know, Murphy's a lot taller, but that ability to hit for the raw power when they were both in Stockton, those were the two guys that you would see that could hit it over that clubhouse building out there in the outfield and or in that berm area towards the arena. And then, you know, the arm strength for both of them makes their defensive abilities kind of plus what they would be just in general from their own athleticism, but also just the pure athleticism that both of them have at their collective positions. You've got, you know, Murphy was a shortstop in high school. He was about 5'10" or so, maybe 160 pounds as a junior in high school, and was a shortstop, and then grew a crazy amount in about a year and a half, added a lot of, you know, physical strength and became this all-star catcher, but he retained this sort of lateral movement that you get from being a middle infielder. And so he's massive for a catcher. You know, you tend to see a lot of guys look more like Kurt Suzuki, you know, when they're kind of smaller and more agile behind the plate than you do someone like him. But, you know, he's a guy who can get down in the dirt really quickly. He's got the good hand-eye coordination so he can get the short hops on the balls in the dirt. And then he's got the arm strength to be able to be a weapon back there as well. One thing you do worry about with him is his health. He had hamate injuries, one in college, which was the only reason the A's were able to get him in the third round. I think he would have been a first round pick otherwise. And then he had another one in Midland a couple of years later. He has no more hamates to break, so, you know, hopefully that means that's good there. But he did have the two knee injuries last year, and it was a meniscus tear and then a cleanup. And I think that's why you didn't see him play quite as much in this Rangers series as you would have, because I think they are being a little bit cautious about how much back-to-backs they get, especially on that field turf. And, you know, one thing, and this is projecting way past where the A's are at this point, but if there's talk of Globe Life Field being the sort of home of the World Series and maybe even another playoff round beyond that, that field turf is going to kind of factor into a few things. I think Pinder's injury is likely because of playing on that turf as opposed to playing on real grass. And I know they've done a lot with field turf over the years to make it, you know, more forgiving on the joints than it used to be, certainly better than that old artificial turf that everyone used to play on, but it's still not grass. And, you know, you kind of wonder with, you know, what kind of effect that would have on an ability for Murphy in a 3 or a 5-game series to play all those games when he would otherwise, if they're kind of keeping an eye on that knee. So something to keep an eye on. But yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, he's a guy too that he said one of the things for him offensively is the less he was thinking about it, the more he was doing, you know, the more he was doing better offensively, that the more he dives into his defensive work and sort of lets the offensive game come naturally, you know, he's able to hit better. And I don't know that he'll be a guy that ever hits for high average, but he takes a lot of pitches, gives you quality at bats. And then when he does get into one, he hits it as far as anybody on the team.
Yeah, he really does. His power is just jumps off the screen, really. I was watching that game, and when he hit the home run, it almost startled me, the sound off the bat. It was so loud, and which I guess is more so this season because of these giant empty stadiums, but still, it was impressive. I have one question before we go for you, Melissa. Was, you know, when they lost Chapman and then Pinder right afterwards, I thought, okay, well, they're finally going to bring up Sheldon Noisy, and that still hasn't happened. I'm just wondering if you have any insight on to why, with all the injuries that they've had, that they've never brought him up? Because I thought he was at least a serviceable utility infielder last year when he came up for a short time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he played very well last year, especially considering he ended up having to play second base where he had not played much at all in his entire life, you know, up to that point. And he was arguably the A's best defensive second baseman at points at the end of last year.
Definitely.
From what I've heard, he didn't play well in the alternate site grouping. And, you know, I think the A's have always been an organization that has made their young players earn it. And if he was in a kind of a funk, sort of similar to what, you know, he went through in 2018 when he was in AAA for the first time, it was hard for him to get out of it. And if he was not getting out of it, they maybe just felt like he wasn't able to be that kind of player this year. I don't think that necessarily means he's not in the future plans, you know, long term, but they're looking for somebody to come in and sort of lightning in a bottle, help them out immediately. And the one thing that Nate Orff brings, and he's obviously got very limited big league time. I think 15 games in 2018 is all he's had before. But, you know, his sort of kind of defining quality as a hitter is the ability to give these tough at-bats. And I think you've seen with Machine, I don't think we've even seen that it's proven that he can pull a ball at this point, right? Like, he seems to be behind most pitches when he does make contact. But because he's giving quality at-bats and he's making contact, the hits are at least coming in some form or fashion. And I think that's been helpful. And you're not expecting him to be a number four hitter. Noisy's a very aggressive hitter, even at his best. And when he's hitting well, that gives you somebody that's, you know, sort of similar maybe to a Ramon Laureano, you know, in that kind of small but powerful package in the middle of a lineup. But when he's not hitting well, you know, I think he, like maybe you saw with Franklin Barreto earlier this year, kind of gives up at bats quickly. You know, there's a lot of swing and miss there. And Orff is somebody that is less likely to have that happen to him at a big league level. So that's my assessment of what I'm hearing. I don't know. I didn't obviously get a chance to see any of those games in San Jose to know for sure. But it sounds to me like it was just, you know, he wasn't playing well enough to justify a promotion.
Yeah, looking at his minor league track record, Noisy's, you're right. There's a lot of strikeout there. It's he had 304 strikeouts in 261 minor league games in the PCL. And nowadays, a guy who strikes out a lot is pretty common. But still, if he's a guy who the A's think is not any better than anyone else who they could bring up defensively, and he's going to, you know, be another guy who strikes out a ton and doesn't give you quite as difficult at bats for a pitcher to handle, because obviously that's the A's main strategy at this point, right? It's to grind out at bats and then feast on middle relief. So if Noisy doesn't really fit into that, then even though, you know, he had 27 home runs last year in Vegas, I mean, granted, the ball is flying out of Vegas and the PCL home run totals were pretty ridiculous last year. But still, I was just wondering, just because I thought I liked what I saw last year in his brief time with the A's. He played 25 games with them. I thought it wasn't amazing at the plate, but he was good enough. And I thought his defense, like you said, I mean, especially with Profar struggling the way he did when Noisy played second, it was definitely a noticeable difference. But I could see why they would be hesitant, especially if he was had a lot of swing and miss at the alternate site, too.
Yeah, you know, and defensively, he is actually quite good. I mean, I think nobody's Matt Chapman, but he would be considered generally an above average defensive third baseman. But my guess is that, you know, they feel like a veteran like Lamb is more likely to give them that steady defense at this point, and maybe gives a little bit of a tougher at bat. Because even with Lamb's struggles, he was at least seeing some more pitches than maybe Noisy would have. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, the season's not quite over yet. And certainly next year, there's that chance to turn a page. And again, I don't think this necessarily means that he never enters the plans for the A's, but I think it was a missed opportunity for him this year.
Definitely. It's going to be interesting this last set of games, because one of the things I'm looking at the standings here, and one of the standings notes is games against teams over 500. And every team in baseball has at least seven of those, except for the A's have three, and those are against the Padres. So, you know, they're going to play the Padres. They're going to play the Dodgers coming up here. The Giants aren't at 500 anymore, but I think they're playing like an over 500 team. So it'll be interesting to see how they can handle a little bit more increased competition, because they're going to find it in the playoffs, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, they can blame the Astros for that, since
like, exactly.
they have an extremely good record against a team that should be over 500 and it manages somehow to remain at that level. And interestingly, is currently the A's postseason matchup, and that seems to change every single day. But the prospect of Justin Verlander coming back would certainly change, you know, what we saw historically between the two teams this season. So something to keep an eye on. You know, it's funny, I don't know if playing for the number one seed necessarily makes sense depending on what the matchup is. And I'm not sure how teams are going to handle that, but just the sort of specter of Justin Verlander returning and, you know, Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton returning for the Yankees. And, you know, they sort of like almost a daily change into who you think you'd want to face in a first round series like that. So we'll sort of see and keep an eye on that. But that whole A's statistic would change quite dramatically if the Astros would win two or three in a row.
This is true. Yeah. That we can blame the Astros for that, as well as we can blame them for pretty much every one of our failings in 2020.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I would blame them on the pandemic too. Why not?
Absolutely. Oh yeah, it was definitely all Altuve's fault.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again on Thursday and see how this trip through Seattle and Colorado went.